Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutane Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasate Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shanyavadi Paschachate Satadine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Shri Krishna Janmastami Mahamahotsav Ki Jai. Krishna Janmastami is our most important and celebrated event in the course of our whole year of Vaishnava activity. It's so important because it marks the appearance of the original personality of Godhead Krishna in this world. Now, why does he come? That's a good question. And we'll start with Bhagavad Gita to help us understand. You all know these two verses from chapter 4, verses 7 and 8. And you can say them along with me, if you know the verse. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. Srijamyaham means Krishna makes the arrangement himself. He appears himself. We can't say that about ourselves. We didn't choose, I'd like to take birth in this family and this country and at this time, and we make the arrangements ourselves. Our birth is not like Krishna's, and Krishna's birth is not like ours. Srijamyaham, by his own arrangements. And the arrangements are for some purpose. And the purpose is when there's discrepancy in the practice of Dharma, the exercise of Dharma. Dharma doesn't just mean formularies of religion. It means Dharma is that which sustains. It's the very essence and nature of the living entity. Eternally, the essence and nature of the eternal living entity, that's Sanatana Dharma. And that Sanatana Dharma is to serve the source of everything, the Supreme Master. In this world, we're all serving some masters. And Sanatana Dharma is to serve the eternal master eternally. That's the function or the activity of the soul. And when there's discrepancy in that carrying out of Sanatana Dharma, Krishna appears. That's the purpose in a broad sense. In the very next verse, again, you can recite this verse along with me if you know the verse. He gives three reasons. Ritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma sangsthapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Janmashtami would be incomplete if we didn't recite that verse. Three reasons. three purposes: to protect the devotees, to relieve the earth and the devotees on earth of the influence, undue influence of demoniac personalities, vinashaya cha duskritam, and to restore the principles of Dharma, which there was discrepancy in, Dharma Shaglani. Dharma Sangstha, to establish or restore the principles of Dharma. So those three reasons, whenever the Lord appears, those reasons are His reasons and those functions are carried out without exception. Now that's Bhagavad Gita's explanation. Now let's go quickly to the graduate study of Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada called the Bhagavatam the graduate study of Bhagavad Gita. And what does Srimad Bhagavatam say? So some of you that are familiar, I know some of you in Naperville, you have Srimad Bhagavatam set in your home. So those of you that have begun reading it in your reading groups, or however you're studying it, you'll know that in the first three chapters of Canto 1, there's six questions in Chapter 1 and six answers in Chapters 2 and 3 that set the tone for the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. And one of those three questions is this one, the reason for the Lord's appearance in this world. Now we know what those six questions and answers are, compliments of Jiva Goswami, because he's defined it in his writings. But the third of the questions is found Canto 1, Chapter 1, text number 12. It's made as a statement, but it's actually a question. You know for what purpose the personality of Godhead appeared in the womb of Devaki as the son of Vasudeva. So the sages want to know what is that purpose for which the Lord appears. And an answer is supplied to that question by Sutta in Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 34. The answer he gives is, assuming the roles of incarnations, he performs pastimes to reclaim those in the mode of pure goodness. Now the Srimad Bhagavatam appears after Krishna's departure from this world, and which means Kali Yuga has already begun. Now, do you know anybody that's in the mode of pure goodness anywhere on this planet Earth? Very rare in this age of Kali. And Krishna appears just at the end of Dwarpa Yuga and disappears just before the beginning of Kali Yuga. And therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam appears just after Krishna's departure to hold that same purpose, the shelter and deliverance of those in the quality of pure goodness. That's the Pritranaya Sadhuna. What about you and me? Because we're observing Krishna Janmashtami, and I don't know if any one of us attending this discussion can say, yes, I'm in pure goodness. Not a tinge of any other mode from the time of my birth until the time of my death. And Krishna came to reclaim me. So what about us? That's the Dharma Sangstha, to provide the means for us to also come to the right standard of pure goodness. There's another place in the Srimad Bhagavatam that one of our great acharyas, Jiva Goswami, explains and the nature of Krishna's appearance in this world. It's in a writing called Krishna Sandarbha. Jiva Goswami takes a verse from Canto 5, Chapter 19, Text Number 5. And in that text number 5, he describes the purpose of Lord Ramchandra's appearance. A little background for those of you that like to understand the structure of Srimad Bhagavatam. In the last 12 chapters of Canto 5, it gives a description of Vedic cosmology. And chapter 19 falls within that Vedic cosmology chapter. And in that chapter 19, it's describing the central part of Bhumandala. Those of you that know Gayatri Mantra, Bhur, Bhuvar, and Svargaloka. Those are three of the 14 planetary systems. This one that we're in is Bhu Loka, or Bhu Mandala, the earthly realm. It's one of the planetary regions in the structure of the universe. And according to the fifth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhu Mandala is topographically primarily flat. You know, like people say the flat earth theory. But it's not, anyway, it's Bhu Mandala is comprised in the central region of seven islands and seven oceans surrounding those seven islands. And the very central island is called Jambudweep. So 19 is describing Jambudweep. And Jambudweep has nine different tracts of land called Varshas. And one of those nine tracts of land is ours, Bharat Varsha. And there's eight other Varshas. One of those is Hari Varsha. And that's where this chapter 19 begins. It's Hanuman, who resides in Hari Varsha, giving a description of Lord Ramachandra. And text 5 begins, Marcha avatara tu iha. Matya avataras tu iha. Which means, he who incarnates in the world of mortals. So to describe Krishna's appearance, Jiva Goswami makes reference to this verse, Marcha avatara tu iha. So I'm going to read the translation. It's about Ramachandra and it speaks of two things. Not just killing of demons, which we found in Bhagavad Gita. Not just killing of demons, but there's another purpose. So let's hear what the Bhagavatam says. Hanuman speaking. It was ordained that Ravana, the chief of the Rakshasas, could not be killed by anyone but a man. And for this reason, Hanuman says, Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of God, had appeared in the form of a human being. Lord Ramachandra's mission, however, was not only to kill Ravana, but also to teach mortal beings that material happiness centered around sex life or centered around one's wife is the cause of many miseries. He is the self-sufficient Supreme Personality of Godhead and nothing is lamentable for him. Therefore, why else could he be subjected to tribulations by the kidnapping of Mother Sita? So again, it's as in Bhagavad Gita, here's Srimad Bhagavatam indicating another reason besides delivering those in pure goodness, it's killing demons. There's a very nice section in Canto 10, Chapter 6, which is Krishna's killing of Putana. And the killing of Putana, because Putana was the first demon that Krishna killed. So there's a lot of understanding in that section about demons and why Krishna kills demons. Putana was a Rakshasi, and the word used in the Bhagavatam verse is Kechuri, which means a witch. That's one of the ways of translating Kechuri. And Prabhupada described, in North India, even today, there's some persons who have that mystic ability to ride on broomsticks or branches of trees. Now, I believe that's part of the Harry Potter story, is that they knew how to ride on broomsticks and they had their broomstick wars. But it's, you know, that's a storybook, but there are such people, and Putana was one of them. She was a witch. And her specialty was killing little babies. In the Vishnu Purana, it describes her her program. She had the ability, among other things, to assume any form she wanted, and one of her favorite forms to assume was a very beautiful woman. Very nicely ornamented, very nicely dressed, very pleasing to the eye. And her program was, she would go in the middle of the night, knowing where children were, and when they were, the parents were asleep, she'd go to the little children and suckle the little children with poison on her breast and kill them. And the parents would wake up with a dead child in the home. And that was her thing. And then the Bhagavatam describes, that was Vishnu Purana, the Bhagavatam describes that she traveled all over, cities, towns, and even small villages, doing her nefarious activities. Now, it doesn't say specifically she was killing babies, but that was her nefarious activity. And according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, by the arrangement of Krishna's own internal potency, she was directed to come to the home of Nanda Maharaj 6 days after Krishna was born. He had a plan for her. She somehow, at the end of the chapter, it describes he was meditating on delivering her, and there's a reason behind it. But he was meditating on delivering her. And so she was sent to their home. And she didn't go at night. She went in the middle of the day. And in homes, cultured people's homes in India, have this arrangement where the men's quarters are on the outside. There's the living quarters. There's the men's quarters. And the women's quarters are in the inner chamber. And that's where Krishna was. And he was alone by providential arrangement. And in comes Putana. And without the detail, everybody in Vraja saw her. Everyone that did see her, and even Nanda and Yasoda, when they saw her, they thought, she's the goddess of fortune, because she was so exquisitely beautiful, and there's detailed 7 different points of what she, how she was ornamented. And her features, including holding a lotus in her hand, they thought, phew. I mean, imagine you have a 6-day-old child in your home. and a stranger comes walking in the house, heading right for where the child is, what are you going to do? 911. But they didn't do anything by Krishna's arrangements of his internal potency and how she was decorated and their impression of her. And she went straight away to the place where Krishna was resting, sleeping. There's a detail, there's many details in the Bhagavatam. When Krishna saw her, he closed his eyes. Now, one of the names of Lord Narayana is he never closes his eyes. Even when he's in Yoga Nidra, Mahavishnu is in Yoga Nidra, he doesn't have his eyes closed. He's not asleep. He's in Yoga Nidra. Eyes never close. It's one of the names of the Supreme Lord. But Krishna closed his eyes. And there's multiple explanations. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives 5 different explanations of why Krishna closed his eyes. But Krishna closed his eyes, but she saw him. And when she saw him, as she had done in her previous life as the younger sister of Bali Maharaj, she saw this beautiful child and she felt those same motherly instincts towards this beautiful child. And she wanted to kill him. And that very verse says, when she saw him, he didn't see her, and of course, he doesn't need to open his eyes to see her, but she saw him, and she didn't see Bhagavan. She didn't feel ecstasy just seeing him, as others who weren't demoniac, like Duryodhana was demoniac, and the demons that came to Braja were demoniac. They could only see the external feature of his form, but they couldn't see who he really was. But one thing she did see, the phrase in Sanskrit is asat antakam. It says, Putana could understand that this child was not ordinary, but was meant to kill all demons. Asat antakam means he doesn't hesitate to kill demons. Krishna came to kill demons. And he certainly knew she's one. She's number one. The first one. And he didn't hesitate to kill her. So that's one of the reasons of the Lord's appearance. He comes to kill demons. Or kill demoniac sinful mentality. And convert the sinful mentality into pure mentality. But those that are incapable and unwilling, he annihilates them. And when he annihilates them, they achieve liberation. Not only liberation from their reactions of their sins, but they achieve liberation. Sayuja. Or, in Kotina's case, more, because Krishna's intention in having her come was to give her more than liberation because of her previous life. Because this question comes up with Putana. I'm going to say it anyways because somebody will ask it if I don't say it. Who was Putana in her previous life? The sister of Bali, when she saw little Vamana, she felt, she didn't say, but within her heart she felt motherly affection and prayed to the Supreme Lord, if I can, in my next birth, if I can have a child like this, I can be his mother. And Vamana blessed her, so be it. In your next life. No, Krishna wasn't the child of Putana, but she was coming as if mother, the nurse. She came with that previous life's mood, and so Krishna wanted to give her that fulfillment of Vamana's benediction. After all, Vamana was who he was in his previous life too. That's described by Krishna at the time of his birth to Vasudeva and Devaki. As Sutapa and Prishni, you underwent austerities, long time, to get a son like me. And I came to you in this very form and said not only one lifetime, but three lifetimes. And one of those was as Vamana. So he already gave his commitment to her in your next life. So he brought her there, although she's a demon. And how did that demon part come in? Because when she, Bali's sister, saw Vamana tied up and roped like a criminal, although Bali surrendered everything, she was very angry. She was really attached to her brother, and she'd been mistreated. Her mood was, I want to kill this boy. So she was, that's where the demoniac birth came. She's from the family of Daityas anyways, but she was more like her brother than the rest of the Daitya clan. But that's where she became Putana. And Krishna wanted to take her to the spiritual world to be with Mother Jashoda. So he overlooked her diabolical purpose and accepted her service, as tiny as it is, and despite the bad parts. That's the merciful nature of Krishna. So back to Canto 5, Chapter 19, Text 5. Jiva Goswami explains, not only does the Supreme Lord come to kill demons, not only does he come to teach the way of proper conduct for human society, as Ramchandra was doing in relation to his pastimes. Jiva Goswami says there's yet another reason. Those other reasons, they're secondary, and the primary reason is his personal reason. And his personal reason is to show sweet pastimes. Again, this attracting the hearts and the minds of us on Krishna Janmashtami to worship Krishna, remember Krishna, identify the very loving and affectionate way that Krishna would engage with his devotees, and even those who are not, to deliver them from their predicament of life. The merciful and very sweet nature of Krishna attract our hearts and our minds. And I think I have time. I want to give one of my favorite examples of Krishna's sweetness. Of course, the whole of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan are filled with sweetness. And it's expressed again and again and again by our commentators. But here is one that we spent in chapter 12, which comes after chapter 11. Chapter 11 is the childhood pastimes, the move from Gokul to Braja and what the children did, and then eventually they were given charge of the calves and Vyomasura and Bakasura, and that very nice verse that says the residents of Vrindavan, they don't even experience, they don't even perceive material tribulation. So chapter 12 is the beginning of the Agasura story. But in the beginning, it's just the children playing. Krishna and his sakhas. We hear that Arjuna, for example, was one of Krishna's friends. Bhaktosi me sakha cheti. And there's different categories of those who are in a friendly, maitri disposition towards Krishna. And rather than going into the detail, there's layers. But the sakhas, like the cowherd boys, their function with Krishna is just playing. They, all day long, they're playing and playing and playing, and the description of their playing activities is provided in 5 verses, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11 from chapter 12. And they were really having a blast. I mean, they were behaving like little children, and Krishna was enjoying the intimacy and affection that they had towards him. Sometimes, this is this quachit, sometimes and sometimes and sometimes, they would do different things. Sometimes they'd go to ponds and stand in a posture ready to jump in the lake like the frogs. Sometimes they would see their reflection in the pond and they would make funny faces and then laugh. And sometimes they would call down a well and hear the echo back and curse the voice saying, "You're dead! How dare you!" and laugh. Sometimes they would imitate the sounds of the animals or the dancing of the peacocks, or sometimes they would grab the tails of the monkeys in the trees and the monkeys would scream. And they would scream back at the monkeys. And then sometimes they would swing from the trees, imitating the monkeys. And on and on and on. And they were just playing and playing and playing. And the concluding verse of that section is emphasizing the sweetness of the pastimes of Krishna in Braja, the additional purpose for which Krishna appears, besides the three that are mentioned in chapter 4 Bhagavad Gita. Protection of the devotees, annihilation of the miscreants, reestablishing principles of Dharma, and expanding sweetness amongst the residents of Vrindavan. And outside Vrindavan, but especially in Vrindavan. Especially. So I'm going to say the verse. Maybe some of you have been around for a while, you know the verse, just because it's an often quoted verse, especially the last line, Krita Punya Punja. Prabhupada would refer to it when you hear his recorded lectures. Now you know where it comes from. Canto 10, chapter 12, text number 11. Very nice verse. Itam satam brahma sukhanu prutya dasyam katanam paradaiva tena masya maya shatanam naradara kena sakam vijharo krita punya punja. So the verse has four parts, four lines, and the first is speaking about the Gyanis, Satam, in this case Satam means the Gyanis, because their goal, their attainment is Brahmasukha. So Krishna is the object of the Gyanis who wish to achieve and may experience Brahmasukha. So that's one category. They perceive Krishna as Brahman and they experience Brahmasukha. The next line, Dasyam Gatanam Paradaivatena. Paradaivatena. They worship the personality of Godhead in Dasya Rasa or Dasya Bhav. Servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they may experience Him in his personal feature, his Bhagavan feature. The third line is Maya Ashrita. Ashrita means taking shelter, and we all know what Maya means. Those who have taken shelter of Maya, when they see Krishna, what do they see? They see he is an ordinary person. Though some see Brahma Sukha, some see Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, trying to serve him. Some see an ordinary person, those that are covered by illusion. But the cowherd boys, they just play with him. All day long. He who is the object of realization of the jnanis to realize Brahma Sukha, those who engage in devotional service of Bhagavan, those individuals don't have the same eligibility as the cowherd boys to play with him. Like, you know, if you worship deities in your home or in the temple, you don't play with him. But the cowherd boys play with him all day long, nonstop. And they're really having a blast. But it's not material happiness. It's an exchange of love fully on the transcendental platform. And so he concludes, Krita Punya Punja. The speaker is Shukadev Goswami, having described how they engage. The acharyas tell us Shukadev Goswami is feeling ecstasy. And he's just like, wow. These cowherd boys are out of sight. How can we properly describe Krita Punya Punja? What previous activities did they perform to have this opportunity? Just playing like little boys, playing with the personality of Godhead. The explanation is, it's not the pious activities being mentioned here. It's not the worldly piety. You know, the Vedic tradition says digging wells and planting trees by the side of the road. Or the modern one is opening schools and hospitals and doing philanthropy. And that's punya. Donating blood to the Red Cross. Or something. That the punya that's being referred to here is devotional service. There's categories of punya. Punya that increases material prosperity, punya that connects one with the impersonal feature, and punya that connects one directly with the personality of Godhead. That kind. How many lifetimes of devotional service and its greatest auspiciousness might they have performed, must they have performed? But it's not just by doing something that one gets some facility like that. One gets mercy. Krishna extends his merciful lotus feet to those who have association with those who have that intimate association with his lotus feet. One gets eligibility to enter into Vrindavan by association and mercy of those who are immersed in Vrindavan service. And that's what Srimad Bhagavatam is providing us, and that's the meditation that I'm sharing with you on the fourth purpose of Krishna's appearing in this world, and one of the reasons why we celebrate it, especially through the Srimad Bhagavatam, appreciating the all-merciful nature. Krishna appears to stimulate remembrance of our eternal relation with him in the spiritual world. Cleanse the dirty things and stimulate the transcendental mood of love. So we're honoring Krishna Janmashtami in that way. And I think I'll end and see if there's some discussion. Now, I don't know how it's going to work. Huh? There's already questions? Oh. Okay. If anyone has questions, you can send them in, I guess, to the chat box or however it works. Okay? Thank you.
This is from Shashireka Mataji. Why Krishna closed his eye eyes after seeing Putana, and is there any reason for Narayana not closing his eyes?
He's always seeing. Narayana is always seeing. Of course, he doesn't need his eyes to see. We know through any one of the limbs, Angani Yasya Sakalendriya Vritti Manti, any one of the limbs can do anything. But in Leela purposes, he's not, Narayana doesn't close his eyes because he's in Yoga Nidra, he's not asleep like what happens when we go to sleep. So he keeps his eyes open. Something like the yogi with half open, half closed eyes. It's just what he does. And there's some of the reasons why Krishna closed his eyes is there's different reasons. Different acharyas give different reasons. One of the reasons is he knew that Putana would be killed, and he didn't want to see the pain that she would undergo being killed because she screamed, "Leave me!" He didn't want to see. Now, he's omniscient, so he doesn't need to see the way that we see, but that's the explanation one acharya gives. Another explanation is that there's a leela to deliver her to Goloka Vrindavan. And if he opened his eyes because she came in such a nasty way, it would have burned her to ashes. And if he the other is Yeah. So he closed his eyes. Now some question comes, a natural question comes, well, wait a minute. He's all merciful, why didn't he deliver her? If he opened his eyes, then she would become purified. So why didn't he keep his eyes open? And the reason was he wanted to do more than purify her, wanted the pastime of taking her to the spiritual world. Anyway, that's an explanation that's given by one of our acharyas. So if you want, you can go to commentary in this section of the Bhagavatam and you'll find Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur giving different reasons. Krishna closed his eyes. Next. Is that it? Okay. So, I see a happy Janmashtami sign over there. I guess we're done. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.
This is from Ajit Gandhi.
Oh. Hi, Krishna Ajit.
My question is similar to a few yogis that practice Yoga Nidra. Did Srila Prabhupada ever do that?
Well, yogis didn't practice Yoga Nidra. It's Mahavishnu who is in Yoga Nidra. The yogis that practice yoga, as we find in chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita, eyes half open, half closed, staring at the tip of the nose. So are there yogis that can do that? Yes. And did Prabhupada do that? No. Why did Prabhupada not do that? Because he wasn't doing that type of yoga. He was doing bhakti yoga. So he didn't do that type. Okay. Well, thank you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.